good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to all of our listeners. I'm Barry Miller, your host for the Revamp Podcast. Today, I'm honored to host Frank Sohn from Novus CPQ Consulting. Frank, it is really cool to have you. Frank has recorded 211 podcast recordings about the CPQ world, and we're going to learn a lot about CPQ, go deep into it during this podcast. Frank has been working in the CPQ space since 1995, and he will have a lot to share about trends and everything CPQ. DealHub obviously is a CPQ, but we've never, at least in my recent memory, haven't focused on any podcast that's only CPQ related. So I'm really excited about this podcast. I've been tracking down Frank for the past few months, but he's been recording so many podcasts on his own that it took a few months to get this into the calendar. So really happy to have you, Frank.
Very excited to be here, Barry.
Yeah. So Frank, maybe can you fill in, tell us a little bit more about yourself, about the consulting company that you work for our listeners that you think would be interesting to them?
Yep. So give you a little bit background on where my CPQ experience comes from. So that was now, 26, 27 years ago when I started working with CPQ. At the time, I was the development lead for industry-specific solution for industry-specific manufacturers. And it was an IBM, SAP, and a small consulting company in Germany, a project. And nobody wanted to touch variant configuration, the SAP variant configuration at the time. So I got the doubtful honor of doing that. And I loved it. It gave me an opportunity to do something else besides developing code, right? So I could go into the plant and see how process actually worked. So that was great. And I continued to do that on the IT side, on the business side. I've set up many product models myself in various tools. I have done that on the IT side, on the business side, as well as for the merger and acquisition side. I was with HP for 13 years, was with IBM, was with other companies. In between 2015, I founded Novus CPQ Consulting. The idea was really to split time in two areas. One as like an industry analyst to learn and work closer even with the different solutions to see how they compare. And the other one is to have customer projects to help them find the right solution for them and get more out of these solutions. So I've done that ever since. Love it. I regularly talk, I would say, probably to 35 different CPQ vendors by now. It's a large amount of system integrators as well. And obviously all the customers I talk to. In addition to that, I also talk to a couple of folks from universities to see what they are up to and what the latest trends are in that area. And I'm located an hour north of Denver in Fort Collins, Colorado. Now you probably know more than you wanted to know, but at least you have some idea. Good.
Well, hopefully we'll learn even more in the podcast. Good. So thanks for sharing. I think the most interesting interesting place to start would be just to talk about the history of CPQ and like the trajectory. Obviously, a lot has changed in CPQ since 95. One thing that I thought about was just that you started doing CPQ with the manufacturing, in the manufacturing industry. And now we see CPQ is much more than just manufacturing. Another thing that I also thought was interesting is that you've now worked with 35 CPQs, or those are the CPQ companies you work with. That means that there's even a lot more. And the ones that you listed in from 95 were probably a lot less. So maybe you can tell me some of the top different trends about that, or the top three shifts from CPQ in 1995 to 2022 today.
Yeah. So, I mean, okay. So I have to think a little bit about that. There is a ton of changes since then, right? So, I mean, the first one is what you have to keep in mind, these, even in 95, so the CPQ tools were not completely new, right? So they were called product configurators. So you wouldn't have called them CPQ. That term just came up somehow in the 2010s or so. The tools have been around for a long time. They have enhanced capabilities concerning product configuration. So you can handle more and more complex configuration. You can handle it faster, and that has changed. But in the mid-90s, what was typical is that you would have a product configuration tool that's tied to an ERP solution, to an enterprise resource planning system like your SAP or Oracle and other solutions which were out there. So they would be tied to that one. you would not have any, not any pricing is not fully correct, because you have pricing capabilities also in what I mentioned earlier, the SAP variant pricing, variant configuration solution that has pricing capabilities. But now you have much more, right? And then the third one is, I think, the user interface and the user experience has completely changed. So initially, the idea was these ERP solutions can do everything, and your sales reps can also use these tools. Now, that turned out not to be true, because a lot of these interfaces were pretty pretty hard to understand. They had lots of terms in there which wouldn't necessarily make sense to a sales user. Like, for example, I remember on the SAP side, they had, and they probably still have, something that's called an item category, which tells you what kind of product it is and what kind of treatment it needs. And I regularly saw sales reps confused by that, right? So now you can hide much more of that capability. And also one additional thing that I should mention, you ask only for three, but this one I could just think of, was that the manufacturers were really pretty strong early on with these product configurators, right? And that has spread to a whole bunch of different industries that use the solutions now. Now you also have solutions which use Visual CPQ, which was even 5 years ago, not even close to the level where it is right now. So there is a ton of progress in all different kinds of areas. The latest one is probably this excitement about integrating your CPQ solution also with billing solutions, since you have the strength towards subscriptions, right? So, and you could go on and on. So tons of things have changed. If someone worked in the mid 90s with these solutions, didn't do anything with it, and looked in 2022 the first time into these solutions again, they would be very surprised what they do and how they are used.
Oh, absolutely. That's super interesting. And I guess for our audience at home that doesn't know what a CPQ is, maybe we could have started a little earlier with this. Yeah. Not all of our audience is maybe even uses a CPQ. And I actually thought it was interesting when you mentioned sales reps didn't know how to use the CPQ, but some of them might not even know what a CPQ is. Maybe we can even define what CPQ is, or product configurator if we want to be more retro.
Yep. So we let's go there. So what is CPQ, or, and that includes a product configurator. So from a sales point of view, and again, going back to the mid 90s, as you have potentially complex products, like, let's take an example, you have a car. Complex products, many different parts, you could have it in many different flavors. So just to make sure you're getting a workable product, so a car you can actually drive and looks and behaves the way you want it, right? So that has taken quite a lot of time. So now time is money. You want to have these, you want to know faster what is configurable and what's the correct configuration, what price do you get for it? So all these CPQ solutions, and previously the product configuration solutions, were basically intended to get a workable product out of these complex products. And you want to do it obviously faster all the time. So which you may have been happy in 95 to configure something and have the solution within 5 days, right? So right now I want to have that in 5 minutes. So the speed is very important. So configuration is really different engines address different complexity. Obviously, not everyone is trying to build a car. So you may have just a much simpler product, a t-shirt or something like this. But even that comes long sleeves, short sleeve, printed, color, and so on, different sizes, right? So you have the configurators for all kinds of different capabilities and complexities. You have pricing, could also be very different. So traditionally, you would say, I import the price out of an ERP system, and I display that while we configure the product, so you know what pricing is. So now I could go much further and could say, I want to use price optimization. So I, to use a slang term from the pricing community, the willingness to pay. You want to get the highest amount the customer is willing to pay. So for that one, you have to potentially consider lots of data and to come to that point. Is a customer willing to pay for that iPhone $699, or could you also get 749 out of it and stuff like that, right? And that's a bad example because that's almost a commodity, right? So, but more with this one-off kind of product as the pricing is more challenging, different. And then you want to also see how do you offer the quote that you get out of this to your customers. So you have PDF. One thing that DealHub does for a while, and I like that from the beginning, is to issue the quotes also on a micro site, right? So we have much more analysis capabilities and stuff like that. That's very good. So you have these capabilities covered there. And what's also kind of new, not completely new, but definitely newer and much wider used, as these different go-to-market channels. So initially, so mid-90s, I go back to that one as a baseline for now, I would say mostly sales reps use it. So then you have channel partners start using it as well. Then you have e-commerce stores start using it in increasing numbers, especially during the pandemic. And you get more and more flavors of this one, right? So it's not just that you're selling it on your own website. You also sell it potentially on marketplaces like Amazon or other industry-specific marketplaces. You also offer more starting points. So you cannot always train a salesperson first for a week to show them how this tool works and what they need to do. So you have to show it to a customer. So in this case, the customer has to keep interest. If they don't understand it, they will leave very quickly. So you have a lot of gamification elements in there. So it's not necessarily the goal for you just to go to a website and configure something. I want to keep you on the site for 20 minutes. I want you to be emotionally engaged in it so that you're coming back and that you're getting more out of the configurator than just getting a valid product out of it. You want to have kind of an experience connected with it and so on. So lots of things have changed. So and I think very exciting things. They should be used much more widely. Challenge now is these tools are still not super simple to implement. They have lots of complex functionality. So it's a very exciting environment. The key right now, I think, is to make sure enough people understand these tools good enough to see what huge potential they have to really have a benefit. And I work with it on both sides, also as kind of a user on the sales operations side, right? So where we support the teams. And that is really, it would be a shame not to use it, let's put it this way.
Absolutely. I think that definitely explains it. Can you give an example for CPQ for software? We mentioned cars, we mentioned t-shirts. What's an example kind of in the software industry for CPQ?
So the software industry is very important for CPQ, right? At least for some parts, because it really started to give this push to CPQ that it wouldn't have gotten just with manufacturing, because in this case, the main driver was SteelPrick probably at that time. So now Salesforce CPQ or Salesforce Revenue Cloud. So what they did at that time, which was unique, is you have a quick installation. So it's not something where it would tell you, yes, we can do this project, but by the way, very complex project. First phase takes a year and a half, and then we have multiple phases after that. So it becomes time intense, and it's obviously it's related to the cost, so it's also very expensive. So when they started shortening the time and making these made the functionality available for the software industry, that's what obviously spurred enough interest on the Salesforce side to actually buy SteelPrick, and then via this acquisition just push it in a different hemisphere, right? So and with it the rest of the CPQ solution. So I think that's really the exciting part that SteelPrick, at least from my perspective, helped to make it much more broadly visible and interesting, because now you have, and that's something you have to keep in mind. Now, I worked on, like when I mentioned HP earlier, I worked on the hardware side as well on the software side. Software requirements, and I have had many software customers in between as well. So software requirements are different from hardware requirements, right? So like one simple example is if you actually have to build the product, you have to have a manufacturing bill of material. You have to know how to build that part, right? On the software side, you don't have to look for that, right? So what I'm looking more for my sales bill of material, and I have that for manufacturing products, by the way, as well, right? So I have both. On the software side, I would have just the sales bill of material, and that's fine. I have also the sales. Industry has helped these CPQ manufacturers, product configurators, quote to cash vendors, and so on, to look ahead into this integration with billing, because they all live on subscriptions. When you have subscriptions, you have changes. So that's something that a lot of manufacturers are interested in, they're working towards, but a lot of them are still not there. So the high tech and software industry helped to basically build the foundation for this. So, and I think so the software industry is now also a big driver and a big user of CPQ solutions. So I think for the whole CPQ market, no matter in what industry a vendor works, they should all be grateful to the software companies and the high tech vendors, because they help to push this forward into a much bigger area, which otherwise wouldn't have been possible.
Cool, love that. So team software. so yeah. Really appreciate that. I think that makes it pretty clear to our audience what CPQ is. And I think let's take it a step further. Maybe we could talk about the benefits of CPQ in more than one sense. Like, why would someone spend time and money, not just on the month by month fee, but also in the implementation phase to use CPQ? Either what are the benefits or what were the pain points that brought them to even start the conversation with CPQ? Yeah.
Let's not start with painful pain points. So let's focus on the benefits, right? So we maybe can go back later to the pain points. So the benefit is that you have basically, you're taking what the sales team does well and make it accessible to everyone. I think everyone in a sales team knows you have, if you look at the team as 100%, there is a good chance that 20 to 30% maybe of the sales people do most of the sales, right? So the other ones trying to use this make work better or worse, right? So, but there's typically a smaller amount of people who does most of the selling. So it's, when you have a solution like that, it helps you to standardize their approaches and make them accessible to everyone, right? So because in this case is what makes you successful and lets me struggle, right? So maybe I can learn from you and take on some of the things that you do and put them into a tool. The other thing is you have a very high need right now to customize almost everything, right? So nobody wants to buy stuff from the shelf that's the same as everyone else. You want to have something that's a little bit unique. So when you have that, you will always have the need for a configurator tool. Right. So some form of configurator, not the most complex, not the simplest. So it always depends what industry you're in, what your use case is and stuff like that. But it helps you to get access to these customers because you can offer these tools to them. You can also offer that in combination with something like guided selling. Right. So where I just ask you questions, I show you 10 products at the end. You pick one, and the one that you pick, you can additionally configure. Right. So that's, I think, what people want. Increasingly, they want to do it themselves. You don't want to just want to talk to a salesperson who gives you these things. I want to do this myself. Then you have the typical classical benefits, right? So it's increased the margin. So that's, again, looking at it from the point of view of a salesperson, because I want to get the higher margin. I want to get more money out of this product from you, right? And that's a typical benefit that you would see, right? So you want to sell more. You want to sell the correct product, because especially as you have more complex products, there's a good chance something is missing, because I guess you've seen that too when folks have Excel spreadsheets. They have worked on these for 10, 15, 20 years. You have a guru in the company who knows every formula in that spreadsheet. Nobody else gets it, basically. You have different versions of the spreadsheet potentially flying around, right? So Even though it has worked, it has saved them quite some money over time. At one point, you have to make a decision to switch because it's just no longer manageable, right? So in the worst case, the person who maintained the Excel spreadsheet is going to retire. So in that case, you have to do something ahead of time. Anyway, so you have more sales, you have higher margins. One thing which is very important to a lot of customers also this cross and upsell functionality. Cross sell meaning, I have an idea, if I sell you a computer and I sell you a handbag with that, or I sell you a mouse with that, that would be a cross sell, right? An upsell would be something like, I sell you the MacBook Pro 13 inch, and I could upsell it to the 17 inch or whatever it is, right? So these capabilities, they actually add considerably to the bottom line. That helps. And what's increasingly playing a bigger role now is it helps your channel partners to sell as well. You can do that in an aligned manner, right? So without having these channel partners needing to spend lots of time to learn every little detail, it saves them also quite a lot of work, right? So because think about this, if you would have sold via a channel partner 20 years ago, then you as the one who manufactures these products, right, could also be a software company, you produce the code, you developed this. You're not selling it directly to your end customer. So you sell via a channel partner. So there's a good chance for them. They don't just want to buy your products, right? So if I sell computers, I might buy from HP, from Dell, from Apple. And I don't want you to see my prices, right? Or I don't want you to see how much business I do with others. Also, HP wouldn't want you to sell a Dell mouse with the HP computer, right? So in this case, they have to set up all this stuff themselves. So we're just fairly complex because now you need the resources to do that. There's not a ton of them out there. And even if they are out there, they're pretty expensive. It introduces additional possibilities for error because you're getting the guidelines from whoever you're working with. They can change that on a very short notice. So you may have to jump into your production system 5 times a day to make the adjustments they made, but only tell you 2 weeks later, right? And stuff like that. So that's really making a big difference as well. And right now, especially with the pandemic, this large increase in e-commerce sale, right? So because now I give you a completely different experience online where you would now expect online, if I let you a product configure, I need to give you help. That may be sometimes visual, that may be audio help, it may be a little video that I show. Hey, nobody thought about this stuff with product configurators. More or less, hey, I train you, I have you a week in the room, I show you everything that needs to happen, you don't get any help beside the help you got in the beginning, right? So you know, that all that has changed and it makes a difference in the bottom line for these companies. And right now there's even more, and then I stopped because I could probably mention 5 more. But one other thing which is important now is data that's flowing into these solutions. So I can give you internal data that I collected. If I collect enough data, I could integrate data from other vendors that's potentially helpful for you if you want to configure something. And that will play an even more important role going forward. Now you could, again, analyze this data 2 different ways. You can do it in the application while you obviously buy something. I give you some guidance based on the data that I got, or I give you reports afterwards so that you have a high level picture at the end of the month, what's working, what's not. So tons of opportunities. It could get even more. I think right now it's important. You don't want to oversell CPQ too much because that seems to happen right now anyway, which I think, honestly, I truly believe that as these tools are very powerful, they can do a lot of very good things, but it has to be installed correctly. So the implementation is very important and you have to do it right. If you just skip a bunch of steps, there's a very good chance you're going through a lot of pain and still don't see the results you're looking for. So just as a little warning note, I didn't want to sound too enthusiastic. I love the solution, think they are great, but lots of things have to go right to see all the benefits I mentioned.
Yeah, absolutely. Frank, you have a wealth of information. It's a shame that we can't go for another hour on this. So I really appreciate it. Let me ask you a specific question, maybe a benefit that would it was part of your top five that wasn't listed, because the list was too many. Something that I've been noticing, I guess a trend in the workspace, is that people are talking about the great resignation, et cetera. And you touched a bit about this on employees adapting it more, and that the CPQ is more adaptable than it was, obviously, much more than in 95. But would you say that, or not would you say, but like, how do you see CPQ playing in the world of employee satisfaction and helping retain employees and helping onboard employees? Do you have any thoughts on that topic?
Yeah. So in this one, I think there is still room for improvement. Let's put it this way, right? So because I think they gotten much better considering where the solutions came from. I think it's still what you, the skill set you need with a CPQ solution is a little bit a mix between art and science, right? So I want to make something interesting for you, as I mentioned earlier. So one example of this would be, if I'm selling you a car, I could sell it to you in a neutral background, so you have no connection to it. I could also go ahead and first let you choose a character, right? So, and I, via your IP address, I know where you're located. So you can select the character. I put the background, I put that in the back, and get you much more engaged in this, right? So when you sell, I could also say, hey, you can download this configuration, can bring it to any vendor, and they could start their pricing options from there and stuff like that, where I get you much more engaged. I could send you, even when you, when I took the car example, I show you how the car is built. I sent you pictures from the manufacturing line. I show you when it's shipped actually, right? And so on. So I think usage-wise, there's much to be done, because it has improved it. You also have more users who adopt it. I think it is still something where I think sales enablement teams, product development teams can do more, have to do more, especially as the tools get more widespread. They're getting more used, right? There is more things you could do to simplify the usage, and that's subjective, right? So that's when I say, hey, what's a good user experience for one is not a good user experience for another. So, but I think there's still room for that. And then also a good number of customers still make the mistake that you think everyone will use it anyway. There's not much of a choice. We already bought it. We have the licenses. We went through the project, and now you go through it and you don't prepare the users, right? So in this case, I think then you shouldn't be surprised if they are not enthusiastic to use this, because there's lots of these little tools everywhere. Nobody is getting paid for using these tools. So I'm not excited if you sent me a new tool, right? So and hence, I think it's really a big task for sales enablement teams to say, hey, what's in it for me when I use this tool? Why is it good to use? And what are the benefits? And how can I learn this without trying to get certified in 3 weeks for all kinds of stuff that I almost never use, right? And where do I have more help? Do I need to offer online help as well? And so on, right? So yes, we've come a long way. From my perspective, there's still a long way to go before they can get more widely adopted, because it's still too much. You see, you have the mobile solutions on the iPhones, on the iPads or tablets and smartphones in general. But who's using that, right? So and how can I get more people access to it by not hiding it in three menus and stuff like this? So I think the vendors spend more effort on it. They also get external teams involved and stuff like that. But I would say, if that's getting considerable improvement, they will be used even wider. So I don't see any way to stop CPQ at this time.
So I love that. Well, always CPQ, even though it's progressed a lot, it's still very interesting and things are changing, and there's even more ways to improve for the industry as a whole.
Yep, absolutely.
Cool. Yep. I think the only thing I told you I was going to ask you, I still haven't asked you. So I'm going to ask you now before we run out of time. So you've done 211 podcasts. You've been doing your podcast since 2017. So it's mostly about CPQ, if not completely all about CPQ. So what I can take this question a few ways, but so you can also answer in a few ways. But what are like three things that you took a really away from the podcast, not from your being the podcast leader, but maybe something you learned during these podcasts that really stays with you, whether it be information about the CPQ, whether it be a life lesson, take it however way you want to take it.
So the one thing I learned is since I had worked already so long with CPQ before I even started a podcast was over 20 years, right? Not everyone is so excited about CPQ as I am or wants to be so excited about it, and that's fine. I think it's good to have a wider perspective. If you use CPQ as less important, then look at it from a sales perspective and see if CPQ is solution, part of the solution, or maybe shouldn't be there, right? So I think that was one thing I really learned, so to take a step back and not just go with my enthusiasm about the topic into everything. The second one was there are many different solutions who serve different purposes. So it's let me compare it with something everyone understands. If I would show you a very nice and sexy sports car, right? So 95% of the people would probably say, hey, that's probably a great car or the best car, right? So, and it's like, it's relative. If you have to transport stuff, the Lamborghini may not be your best bet, right? So if you want to drive really fast, again, a pickup truck is probably not your choice, right? So you have to look at it from different perspectives. So I think when you see ratings, evaluations of these solutions, they are always made with a certain preconception on what you consider good or what you consider helpful. And that can be very different for different customers. So it's hard to really make everything look at it from one point of view. So I think that was another one. What else could I tell you? I mean, right now, what I realize is there are many more people working on CPQ than used to work on it. It still takes time. And I think that's one thing that you can also see, even though the topic is hot, it sees lots of investment and lots of other very positive things. The number of people in the area grows fairly slow. You have lots of people who come in there and fill roles, and you may get good salaries and everything, but it's still the experience takes quite some time. So it's I expect that will improve considerably over the next 2 to 3 years. But I think right now that's hampering the progress a little bit because you have all this excitement, but a very limited pool of people who can help actually do that and do it well. So you may find people who do it, right? So, but it's a question of, does it work well enough that you have the benefits you were expecting? So yeah, if I would have these three things, I guess that's what I would say, yeah.
Cool, thank you for sharing that. Glad I got to ask that. So if someone wants to listen to your podcast, which I think everyone will after listening to this, interview, but where can they find it? What's it called?
So you can find it on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon, everywhere you go. You will probably see it. Just type in CPQ Podcast on Google and you will see a couple of places. You can also go to my website as thenovoscpq.com, and there you will see on the first page there's a link to the podcast. So just go on to one of these places and you should find what you're looking for.
Perfect. Well, with that, I want to thank you for your time, and thank you to our listeners for checking in and listening today. If you have any questions, reach out to Frank, visit his website, listen to this podcast, and speak to you guys next week. Thanks again, Frank, and thanks again to our listeners.